The content here is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as medical advice.
Please consult a healthcare professional with any medical questions and concerns.
If you are experiencing an emergency or need immediate help, call 911.
In no way does listening, reading, emailing, or interacting on social media with our content establish a therapeutic relationship.
I just get so angry. It's hard to sit still.
I don't want to be this way.
My brain just feels all scrambled.
Nikki, happy 50th.
Yes, this is our 50th episode. This is so exciting.
It's not your birthday today.
No, it's not. I definitely want to take that right back and put it on the episode. It's not my 50th yet.
No, it's our 50th episode of the Scrambled Podcast. And it's kind of a big deal because when we started this out, again, we wanted to just kind of start the conversation. We thought people weren't understanding anxiety very well. So we thought, here's a platform we can do it relatively inexpensive and get the word out. And here we are a year and a half later and 50 episodes in. So yay us. But really, thank you, the listener, for continuing to download and subscribe and also to rate and review us. It all kind of helps get more eyes and ears on the podcast.
So for our 50th episode, we have an extra special guest with us. We have Chad's son, who was the inspiration for Scrambled, the name and the podcast. So
welcome.
Hi.
He's upstairs, I'm downstairs. So we're like not even in the same room as we do this because it could, you know, it's a little awkward, but we're going to get through it. So we first want to start, I think, by explaining, what do you think of the podcast? Do you think it's a good idea? Do you mind that we've modeled it off of your experience?
I mean, I don't... It's your podcast. You came up with the idea. I honestly could care less.
That's good that you couldn't care less.
Some of my teachers listen to it and bring it up to me, and I'm just like, oh God, what did he say?
Well, and I've said to him before that, you know, it kind of stinks that you're having to go through all of this with anxiety and other things, but it's like you're helping others who are coming behind you. And that's one thing I hope this platform does, is helps other families kind of wrap themselves around mental illness and try to break the stigma and make it something that's more conversational.
And we know that by sharing stories and opening this platform for other people to share theirs, we've heard that makes a difference. And I've seen other people kind of carry that forward and share their stories. And so I'm really glad it all came together. But that being said, I know that anxiety kind of stinks. And I know that, you know, dealing with some of those things is really hard, especially when you're a kid. And so, you know, I'm sure it's not fun to be someone that struggles with anxiety, right? I know it wasn't for me as a kid.
Well, it's fun, but once you get to, like, not really used to it, but once you kind of know how to deal with stuff, it's kind of easier, but it's never easier, like really easy. But
that makes sense.
Can you kind of walk us through a typical day in your brain from like when you get up in the morning till you go to bed at night? What's going on in your brain?
Stress.
Okay. Even from the moment your feet hit the floor in the morning?
Sort of, yes. Because when I go to school, well, like when I'm getting ready, I'm worried what's going to happen, what I'm going to be doing that day, or being like, what am I going to do in math class? Am I going to have homework today? Or what if I'm going to have a bad day? Mm-hmm.
So the worried thoughts kick in almost immediately.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Do you ever have calmness in your day?
Maybe for like 10, 20 minutes, but not really a long period of time.
And what brings you that calmness?
Drawing, most of the time, unless I make a mistake and I get mad. But other than that, music, sometimes friends, yeah.
All things you're not allowed at school. The music, the drawing. I've told this story probably twice on the podcast, so here's your third time. But a few years ago, we were in church, and the kids were just kind of all over the place. My son himself was under the pew. He was 8 years old, and I'm thinking, you need to be sitting here listening. You don't have to be completely engaged, but you're old enough to sit here and listen. So we got in the car, and I lost my mind.
Yeah, you did.
Got home, and the kids came to me and said, we're ready to talk. And I was like, I'm not, but if they're coming to me, then I'm going to take the...
I did not come to you. I think mom did.
Okay, maybe my daughter did. Somebody came, and I know I wasn't ready to start the conversation, but they were, so I took advantage of it. So we talked it out, and I said, then tell me what the sermon was about. And my son went, blah, 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 and told me what it was about. And I went, crap, because it was that moment, though, that I knew, and I could explain to his teachers, it might look like he's not paying attention because he's doodling on his paper or his eyes are wondering elsewhere, but he's still listening. I mean, he gets good grades, So there's proof in that, but it's getting people to understand just because he's not making eye contact with you and engaging with you does not mean he's not taking in what's happening.
Yeah, I get from my teachers a lot, hey, why are you not participating, or why are you not paying attention? And I'm just like, I am. I'm just can do everything at once.
You do it differently than some kids, and yeah, they may not be able to tell.
I can draw while I'm doing math homework.
I can barely get through math homework, so there's not going to be any multitasking there on my part. Tell me what it's like with teachers when you tell them I'm anxious, whether it's I'm doodling here because I'm anxious or I am engaging with you, even though it doesn't look like it. Like, what's the conversation you have with some of your teachers?
I don't really tell them that I get anxious unless it's one of my favorite teachers.
Why not?
I don't know. I just think it's kind of embarrassing.
Okay.
And it's weird to say, hey, I'm anxious.
How do other kids handle it? Or have you had any interaction with other kids your age that you have found them to be kind of anxious and
yes,
and maybe been like, hey, I can relate?
Yes, I help them. I help this one kid out a lot.
Okay.
Like, he gets really isolated easily, and then he goes on a rampage. I calm him down. Like,
because you've been there.
Yeah, and he's just like me. He'll do the same things as me. I'm like, okay, don't do that. I've learned.
What's it like, because I could answer this from a parent's perspective, but what is it like for you to see someone else do what you do? And I'll even throw it forward to be kind of like, ugh, nails on a chalkboard kind of thing.
I think you should know that, because I think I learned from you. But
well, that's why I'm laughing, because I've seen you do things and I'm like, ugh. But then I'm like, oh, it's me. I do that too.
Yeah.
So what's
hi,
it like?
It's me.
Yeah, it's like looking in a mirror or watching a TV show that says, I'm seeing that person's actions and it's annoying me or upsetting me, but man, that's me.
Yeah. Like,
what's that like for you?
Some of my friends, they're really passive aggressive like me. They'll say,
and me.
Yeah. I wonder where I learned from, but,
the best,
but, they'll say something passive aggressive or do something passive aggressive or, act all defensive. And I'm like, oh my God. Okay. Please don't.
Because you're the same way.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like fire versus fire, almost a little like. Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you, and it's mm-hmm. kind of related to what you're saying, but it's taking it more home. Your dad has said on the episode or on the podcast a couple of times that your experience of having anxiety has made him parent differently, mm-hmm. that it's changed him too. And I'm curious if you agree with that and like what you've seen change. What does he do different now that everyone understands that what you're dealing with is anxiety?
I have never been more happy that I edit these episodes than I am at this very second. Go ahead, son.
He used to get really mad with my actions, like at SeaWorld.
Ugh.
I was, yeah, you want to tell him that story?
No, go ahead.
I was being a little stupid idiot, being a little bit of a jerk. And he got really mad at what I was doing. I was like doing something. I wouldn't go to the bathroom. I don't know.
If I remember right, you just weren't listening.
Yeah,
period.
I wasn't listening.
And that's looking back, it was because he was anxious and didn't know what to do. There was, I mean, not that it was overly crowded, because we had just done Disney World the day before, and he was mostly, no, you had a day at Disney World too that was not fun. But it's like, you know, you, I think as a parent, you instinctively parent those actions. But as you've talked about a lot, Nikki, that you've got to parent the communication, the reason behind that action. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you learn as a parent. And I think that's what I meant by, it's made me a better parent, or a different parent, I guess, because I'm able to see that he's anxious at certain times. And instead of getting angry with him, we can first calm him down, re-regulate him, and then talk about it and move on.
What is something you wish your teachers understood about what it's like to have anxiety?
That's a hard question, but also easy at the same time. Probably like, okay, I need a break right now, or I need to leave the class right now. I can't just finish your work and let me go. Like, just let me go, please. Like,
so they don't understand always that like just a few minutes, you know, break or leaving the classroom for a few minutes would actually make a big difference.
Yeah.
They just want you to do your work and get it done. And you're like, no, you don't understand. I need a break now, not in a few minutes.
Sometimes I don't think they understand like big changes for me. Mm-hmm. I don't like big changes. How I'm really hard on myself. I don't know if that's just a problem of me, or that's just a problem. Like, I don't think they understand how hard I am on myself. I think it's just like a little phase.
So it sounds like you're saying that you wish they understood that you just needed time. That when you ask for time or you ask for a break or you ask for space, it's very important. And with that, you can do a lot. But if you're not offered that, it's hard to do what they want you to do.
What does a break do for you?
It just kind of gets my mind off of some, like, gets my mind off of it a little. Just kind of makes me forget what I was worrying about or something.
Okay.
Doesn't work all the time, but.
But it just gives you a chance to kind of re-regulate yourself.
Yeah.
Kind of a Control-Alt-Delete.
And besides taking breaks, what else helps when anxiety is kind of creeping up? Like, whether you're in the classroom or you're at home or you're in another situation, what are other things you do to manage those feelings?
Music. Okay. Or drawing. Talking to friends. Especially with my friends. They always make me laugh and make me laugh until I start crying.
That's definitely a mood changer.
Yeah, like, makes me happy. It gets my mind off of everything.
What advice would you have for other kids that are just like you?
Don't be like me.
Well, they can't really help that. It's the way they're wired. What would you tell them if they're having a difficult time with a teacher who doesn't understand anxiety?
Ask for help. Go to your counselor.
I have a different question for you, and I don't know if you'll want to answer this one or not, but a lot of kids your age kind of have this view of counseling as stupid or like it's punishment and something that they don't want to do. And they're, you know, they're embarrassed to go or they're upset that they have to go and they just feel like it's the worst thing ever. Of course, being a counselor, I think it can be a pretty good thing if it's the right fit. And, you know, if you're open with that person about what you need. But I'm wondering, like, what do you think of it?
I like going to my school counselor because she's somewhere that I could actually go to, like, during the day, not like after school, where all my stress is not really. But at school, like, when I have something on my mind, I can just go to them. Some kids think it's stupid, but it helps a lot.
And it's great that you have a counselor at school that you could go to. And there weren't those necessarily when I was a kid. So it's great to know that there's options.
I want to talk a little bit about the name of the podcast is Scrambled, and we've talked about you are the inspiration for it. And I don't think you realized it at the time, but I've since explained to you that one night it was about 11:30 and you were having a panic attack. And I had this idea for this podcast, and I got you out of the panic attack and got you to a calmer place. And then after you were calm, I asked you, I said, what does it feel like? And you actually explained to me that it was kind of like the movie Pearl Harbor, where all the bombs go and it's like just pandemonium because people are running away from it. Some people are running to it, and it made sense to me. But then you said your brain just feels scrambled. And that's where I went, oh, what a cool idea for a name. So my question for you is, now that you're a few years away from that, do you still feel like your brain is scrambled, or
is it starting to be unscrambled?
It's more hard boiled.
Gross. I think hard-boiled eggs are gross, but what do you mean by that?
It's more put together, not all clumped apart.
Okay, I get it.
That's awesome. A little messed up because I go to a middle school, so.
Things are firming up a little bit. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're so glad that you could talk with us for this episode, and we're also glad you're doing better.
We're going to pause for just a second. More right after this. And we welcome you back. In episode 50, being a huge deal for us, we wanted to make it big, and that's why we had my son on there, because he was the inspiration behind it. So we wanted to share a little bit of his story. But we also put it out to you and said, "What? Ask us anything." And thank you for not asking us anything that made us go, we'll go through a few questions, and I'll start. Here's one. It says, what has surprised you most about doing a podcast?
Oh, am I supposed to answer that one?
Yeah.
Because you're reading the question. Okay. I think that the most surprising thing has been the number. It's like two answers in one. So the number of people who aren't yet sure what a podcast is but are interested, right? Uh-huh. What is this pod thingy that you do and where do I find it? That's been so cool. You know, and it's like they're saying, I have no idea what a podcast is, but I want to know more because I'm interested in what you're doing. So that's been really cool. But on the other side of that, I've been very, very surprised by the number of people that are listening to it, that are sharing it, that are, you know, just so supportive of us doing this.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you? What has surprised you?
Ditto. I think what has surprised me the most And I know this is going to sound weird, and I don't want to come across a certain way, but spending 22 years on TV, I dealt with that. Like you would do things, you would do stories that would have an impact, and you would get some feedback that, you know, thank you for doing this. I did a story once years ago on how to properly adjust your car mirrors. Right. But with video techniques and stuff, I made it as interesting as I could. And literally within the last 2 or 3 years, like right after I quit the TV gig, somebody came up to me and be like, you know what? I still remember how to do those mirrors because I watched that story and I adjusted them and that really helped. And it stuck with that one person. I also did it to my mirrors and people get in my car and like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, this is the proper way to do it. So I think the surprising thing for me is when you get people in public who stop you, and I told the story of the one lady in one of our stores who came in, she just like pointed her finger in my face and she's like, your podcast is life changing. And you know, it's kind of like, oh, okay, thank you. And she's like, I'm serious. Like we've gotten great information. It's helped us out. We've shown people or told people about it and spread the word and kind of got their story out there too. So that's what has surprised me, but also not surprised me because I've done media before. That was a really long-winded answer.
But an answer nonetheless. Well, I have a question for you then.
Oh, good.
I'm going to take the original question and I'm going to modify it. Okay. So I know you have a history of working in TV. And so I'm curious, what do you like most about podcasting compared to your time in TV?
Ooh, what do I like more? So I guess I will answer this because I left the TV industry and I really miss the creative aspect of putting a story together. So this kind of scratches that itch because I get to edit it and be a little creative. What I don't like about it as much is I love to shoot the video and add that to the storytelling and intertwine sound and everything and really make a good package out of it to say, here is a story for you. Where the podcast, we just go. So it satisfies an itch, but more importantly, it's getting the word out. I mean, I did a TV story on childhood mental health, right? When my son started to kind of show signs and everything, I'm like, people need to know about it. So I did that, but now it's so much more in depth with this because we have, you know, bi-monthly episodes. Mm-hmm. Ooh, is it my turn to ask?
Yes.
All right. Because the next question I'm going to ask is one that I am not qualified to answer because I have a degree in communication. And it is, when you have a teacher that has a growth mindset and wants to learn, what are some things that you feel are helpful for them to know? So you have somebody who's like, okay, I understand it. Let's learn and grow together. What are like three basic tips you could give to parents to give to those educators?
So it's probably wrong and a little biased to say, listen to episodes 1 or 2 through 6, right? Like that's probably not what
I think solid advice.
Some of the things in the early episodes where we talked about the brain and, you know, the purpose of feelings and what anxiety is and just some of the like red flags that's what somebody's struggling with. I think those are really, really good places to start. And then if you know, a teacher or any adult who has this idea of like, I want a new perspective and I want to continue to figure out how to work successfully with this child. I mean, I think the understanding the child and sitting down and talking with you and getting the perspective that the parent has, because of course they're going to know that child best. I think that's really important. And then just like finding out more about the stuff that's not working. There's so many books. I know I'm not going to push books, but there's books, there's websites, there's podcasts, there's all these places that you can get information. And so if you're someone in a child's life and you want to know more, just keep seeking knowledge until you feel like you've got it. I don't know that there's a specific resource I would send them to because there are so many great things.
Yeah. And I think just developing that relationship, and I just speak from experience with my son and the teachers that he's had that have taken the time to get to know him and look past the behavior that he presented, have really made a difference in him. And, you know, early in the episode, when he talked about his school counselor, she took the time to get to know him and understand him. And they're bonded for life. And teachers always have such an impact on children. I mean, I still remember some of my favorite teachers and things they did for me. And it's like, I don't think teachers get enough appreciation for that because they don't get that return on investment for years down the road. But I still see some of my grade school teachers and I love running into them because one of them, she's passed away now, but I saw her years ago and she came up to me. She goes, I taught you to read. And I went, you're right. And now I, you know, at the time I read for a living and I was like, what a wonderful like circle back around that was. And she was just a delightful person anyway. So it was always nice running into her. All right, here's another question, Nikki, that you're definitely more capable of answering than I, but it's one I also want to know the answer to. If you have a child who struggles with severe anxiety, what are some ways you can get them out of the house to go to the grocery store, to go see a movie, to go to a restaurant without being panicked that you're going to cause a scene?
Okay, so part of it is practicing and recognizing their strengths. What are they going to handle well and do well, and what are they not going to handle well? And okay, practicing the skills that go into it. So actually the episode 49, Traveling mm-hmm. Different, Dawn Barclay had some really good tips for how to kind of start with little steps to kind of help kids get in the right mindset for a vacation or traveling or doing mm-hmm. different things that change the routine. So I would say that same skill set or that same approach can apply to smaller things like going to the grocery store, going to school, just leaving the house and being around other people. It's start small. Maybe it's we're getting to the mailbox today, or maybe it's walking around the neighborhood for a few minutes. And then maybe the next day we go a little further and we just do things to kind of build up that confidence. And I describe it to kids and parents like they've got a backpack on their back, and every, you know, successful experience kind of gets loaded in that backpack. And so, you know, the more you do, the more opportunity you have to kind of fill up the backpack with confidence. And so then eventually they're you know, fully ready to go on their trip because the confidence is fully stocked. And so, but starting small and doing little things and then celebrating those successes. If you've got a truly anxious child that's not doing well, you know, getting to school or getting, you know, going into public places, you absolutely need to celebrate when they do get through it. Like if they do a couple of hours at school and they do really well, even if it's not a full day, we've started somewhere, right? We're starting the process. So celebrating those things. And then kind of thinking about like, what is the most important thing here? Like if your kid doesn't enjoy going to a loud restaurant with lots of bright lights and it's all crowded, do they need that right now? Is that the most important skill for them to work on? Or should we maybe start smaller, you know, get a babysitter or let them be in a safe space, and then you go to the crowded loud restaurant and work up to that over time.
So maybe don't go to the hibachi grill on your first outing.
Maybe not. Maybe start very small, you know, tiny little places that are a little bit more, you know, personal, and you can kind of stay away from big crowds. But yeah, so baby steps is the short answer to what you've asked.
Do you have one more question?
Well, yes. Someone wanted to know, what is selective mutism? And I realized
that me that asked that question, because every time we bring it up, I'm like, I need to ask her what that is.
So yeah, we mentioned it in passing when we were talking about childhood anxiety disorders, but we didn't really go into a lot of depth with it. But it's essentially it's when a child, due to anxiety or some other, you know, sort of, I say glitch, but that's probably not the right word, but they're not speaking in all settings. So they might be comfortable speaking around their, you know, family members and, you know, close friends, but then when they're in the classroom, they're just silent, like will not talk. These are kids who, you know, their anxiety kind of has a paralyzing effect on them. And so they just simply won't speak. I've met kids who won't talk at home either. And it's not until they learn, you know, kind of some skills for managing that anxiety and kind of, again, building up some confidence that they are able to start speaking again and kind of being able to engage with other people outside of their comfort zone. But so selective mutism is essentially a type of an anxiety disorder that kiddos can have where they only speak in selective situations and otherwise appear not to.
Okay. I thought it was some sort of mutation or something in the brain, but it's selectively mute. I get it.
That's right.
And we are not selectively mute. We like to talk about it. We can't thank you guys enough for downloading and sharing this podcast. We truly, truly do appreciate it. Our next episode is going to be a pretty difficult one, but we're going to talk about how to talk to kids about coping with and dealing with hard things. So tune in for that. That's going to be in a couple weeks. Our whole goal in starting this podcast was to start a conversation, and that conversation continues with you.